Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Connections between France and North Africa have long been shaped by colonialism, nationalism, and economics. This intercultural relationship has also been mediated through the arts. In Muslim women in French cinema, voices of Maghrebi migrants in France, Leslie Kellifer Kemp examines one population who has often been left out of these cultural formations. Kemp focuses on the representation of first-generation Maghrebi women in France in documentaries, short films, feature films, and telefilms. Her analysis revolves around filmic textual analysis and the production, audience reception, and distribution of these art forms in contemporary French society. Kemp is attuned to filmic genre conventions, narrative structures, and formal techniques that media producers and artists use to both appeal to large mainstream audiences while challenging dominant stereotypes about Muslims. In our conversation, we discuss views of North Africans in French society, means for recovering voice in film, the role of religion in French cinema, the mediation of subjects in documentary films, the role of objects in voicing difference, expressing agency of women protagonists, the goals of dialogue and voiceover versus body language or nonverbal communication, and film's ability to challenge dominant stereotypes in France. I'm one of your co-hosts, Christian Peterson, and thanks again for listening to another episode of New Books in Islamic Studies. Without any further ado, here's my conversation with Leslie Kellifer Kemp about Muslim women in French cinema, Voices of Maghrebi Migrants in France, published with Liverpool University Press in 2016.
Welcome, Leslie. Thanks for joining us on New Books in Islamic Studies. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So this book, Muslim Women in French Cinema, I really enjoyed. It's a topic that I'm certainly interested in. And you do a really expansive job in covering not only what we might kind of expect, but all sorts of genres and types of materials. And I think it's a really wonderful resource for folks that might be interested in exploring this further. But before we get to the book, could you tell us a little bit about how you got where you are? What brought you to cinema studies? What brought you to the study of Muslims in France? How did you get where you are?
Sure. Well, as an undergraduate, I studied French and political science, and I was always interested in immigration in France. I guess always since I kind of discovered the diversity of France and started looking at it from a political perspective, and I wanted to find ways of bridging my interests. And so when I wanted to continue to go to graduate school, I chose to go to Florida State University because they have a program there that's really open to literary projects, but also kind of cultural studies approaches. And there's a Winthrop King Institute for French and Francophone Studies there. And Alec Hargreaves was the director of the program at the time, and he kind of wrote the book on immigration in France. And so I wanted to work with him. And when I arrived, a lot of my coursework was actually in literature. And I came to film a little bit later, but it was I think it really opened my eyes when I started looking, you know, we also, you know, study oftentimes in the more classical approaches, the, you know, kind of 19th century literature, 20th century, these different, different kind of, more, you know, approaches. But as a young scholar, kind of realizing there's a whole other, you know, coming into Francophone studies as well. So French and Francophone studies, and thinking, wow, there's literature from the Caribbean, there's literature from North Africa, there's literature by North Africans in France. And then finding out, of course, too, there's a whole body of cinema. And the way I came to this particular subject of Muslim women in French cinema and women from North Africa in particular is my very first semester at Florida State in Alicargue's class. We read a novel called Le Théorème d'Archimède, or Tea in the Harem, by an author called Mehdi Sheref. And he was one of the first, I guess you would call someone from the second generation of children of Maghrebi immigrants in France to become a well-known writer, and this was in the early 80s. And in the dedication of the book, and so it's kind of, to give just brief summary, it talks about the experiences of this, the protagonist who is of North African origin, and his friendship with a majority ethnic Frenchman growing up in the outskirts of Paris in kind of difficult neighborhood. And this, a lot of it was inspired by Mehdi Sheref's life. And so anyway, when I opened the book and I read the dedication, and it said, Mabarka, ma mère qui ne sait pas lire. So to Mabarka, my mother who doesn't know how to read. And so I was just, I remember the moment thinking, wow, this is, you know, this is a part of the population of France I don't know anything about. And I was really touched by the depiction of the mother, Malika, in this book. And Sheref actually, his book was a success, and he made the book into a film. So he was approached by Costa Gavras, and the film was very successful and kind of opened people's eyes, I think, also, you know, to the presence of this this population in France. You know, there were other authors as well, but in cinema. And that's kind of where it started for me in terms of getting, you know, really interested and wanting to know more. And as I went through graduate school and was looking, how might I shape my dissertation? I originally thought I would, you know, do something about, you know, this, the first generation, these, the generation of the mothers in cinema and literature. And when I started doing my field work and went to France doing research, I found a lot more films than I expected to find. And so that that basically is how the book came to be just about films. So and you know, every kind of step of the way, I started looking at feature films and I thought, wow, there are a lot of documentaries that are really interesting. Then there are a lot of short films that are also interesting, and the made for television films or telefilm. So that's how the book kind of became shaped.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that story, how you came across these kind of first generation immigrants. Could you tell us a little bit about North Africans in French society, and specifically these first-generation Maghrebi women? What's some of the cultural background we might need to know to get into your project?
Sure. So this particular group of women, for the most part, were the wives of economic migrants who came to France. So the men typically came in this was post-World War II, you know, the 50s, 60s, and the women tended to come in the 60s and 70s. There was a process called regroupement familial, family regroupment, and you know, the men. So something to know. So I guess in terms of the socioeconomic status, you know, people coming to France looking for work, they did not intend to stay in France, and you know, and it just kind of became the way it was. People, you know, settled, they had jobs, they were often sending money back to the home country. And then they had children, and the children started going through school. And so it just became, and because of certain laws, it was more difficult to leave for immigration status reasons, more difficult to leave France after in the mid 70s and to kind of come back. So to make sure that they could stay in France and with their, with the jobs, they, they became rooted in France, and especially through the children. And so a lot of, you know, the women, for a lot of them, there may have been arranged marriages, or maybe they lived in either the films that I studied, you know, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia. They may have been separated from their husbands for several years while the husbands were in France, or would just come back to visit. And then eventually the husbands brought them to France. And so many of the women didn't you know, speak, they weren't educated in a formal sense. They didn't speak French. The men had more contact with French society. So in the workplace, the children had more contact with French society in schools. And so, but the women, some of them worked outside of the home, some of them didn't, but they had a very different experience for that reason. And, you know, so I guess that's, in a nutshell, what I call first generation women from the Maghreb.
Now, your work, I would say, is a key work in the scholarship on minority cinema in France. Where would you place your book within this subfield, if we can call it? What would you say are some of the broader conceptual interventions you've sought to make with your book?
Well, I guess I was kind of seeking to fill a gap in looking at a generation of women. There are other studies about men in the cinema. There are a lot of studies. Works by Carrie Tarr, Will Higby, about the cinema produced by and about people of Maghrebi origin. So what maybe can be called Burr literature or banlieue cinema. And so I just kind of saw that there were a lot of films that had been either overlooked or that people didn't know about, or roles within films that a lot has been done about, you know, the children of immigrants, their experiences, but not about about the parents' generation. And so that's kind of you know, what I sought to fill. And also you know, looking at an opportunity to take this subject and to, instead of going on kind of a thematic approach, to take, I divide the book by chapters that are devoted to different types of films. So a chapter on documentary, short films, the telefilm, and then the feature films. So trying to also, especially with the made for television films, to look at films that are not always readily available, but have the potential to really impact perceptions about Maghrebi women and the broader population, Maghrebi population. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of exciting work being done, but that was kind of my approach.
Yeah, and the way you framed it around genre, I guess, as opposed to themes, I think really did work well when we get into these examples. One of the other kind of themes you set up in the beginning is this idea of voice, and you kind of alluded to this, but in the book you point out that these first generation Maghrebi women are often thought to be by the larger society or rendered in very particular ways silent. So what does this idea of voice mean in your study, and how do you get at it through your analysis?
Sure. So yes, as you mentioned, then there's this perception that this first generation women, kind of a silent generation, often that's kind of a label, or, you know, submissive, you know, don't communicate, don't branch out, don't get, you know, are very aren't rooted in France. And so looking at the idea of voice, not only you know, can consider it being types of, you know, self-expression, but also how the perspectives are transmitted or communicated. And as I was looking at, you know, a lot of different films, I realized that this is done in many different ways. So this is, you know, thinking about it very broadly in terms of like expressing the subject position. That could be through, you know, speech. What do they say? I could, you know, thinking about also in what language, to whom are they speaking? Body language, analyzing that, in documentaries, you know, the editing process, how that shapes or constrains the, you know, the voices of the women, you know, what they have to say is so looking at point of view, subjectivity, representation, agency, and, you know, thinking about just, you know, to what extent do the films challenge these, you know, existing perceptions that there's a disempowered, you know, generation of Muslim women, and to think about how the film form itself can be used to in different ways, you know, to do this, and yeah, just to kind of paint a much broader picture of Maghrebi women in France. Answers your question. Yeah.
Since I'm situated within religious studies and Islamic studies more centrally, this is kind of a question that I'm going to take the liberty to ask. But
sure.
You talk about, and you point to this in various ways, this kind of intersection of religion and French cinema. That is not always very explicit or a topic that is of interest. So to what extent is Islam as a category raised in these films? And what would you say the inclusion or very often the absence of overt Islamic references tell us, since these are, by all accounts, Muslim women?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I think, so as you mentioned, you mentioned the word absence, and in a lot of, for the most part, I think there are very few films that in which Islam is raised explicitly with reference to first generation women. There are a few. There's a Yamina Ben Yehi documentary called Femme d'Islam, and that and one part of that focuses on France. In the Théorème d'Archimède that I mentioned, that I was first inspired by, in that film, there's a scene of the mother praying. It's a very private moment. And actually, I think that may encapsulate for a lot of the films this kind of absence, or where the women don't necessarily talk about it because it is a very private thing. And so there are, you know, there are, you know, very, very few examples which it's explicitly treated. Yet it often is in the background, and sometimes it may be related to relation. It comes up in relationships between, for example, the parents and the children, and religion being part of something that the parents connect with their home country as well, and with family, and with part of kind of the package that they associate with their home country and not with France, is that being a difference. And so if, you know, you may have the parents, you know, practicing in certain ways or having certain, you know, traditions associated with Islam. Whereas if the children are seem to be rebelling a little bit, it's that's maybe where some tensions, you know, certain expectations for, you know, young women marrying within the religion, something like that, that could, I wouldn't say it's always conflictual, but that's another area where it can come up. So oftentimes, yes, tradition, transmission, you know, so what does it tell us also that the absence, I think there is a lot of directors, I would say, are somewhat hesitant to broach the topic. Maybe they also just have other things they want to say, or other things they. So it's there, but not necessarily at the forefront in a lot of films. And I think also there's a desire, of course, without speaking too generally, but by some directors to not want to necessarily portray a difference with the larger population in France, and so to focus on, you know, the way people are similar, what they share, and of course, you know, integration, religion, those are big, very big topics. And but in part of it, I think also is think about French culture there's the idea of laïcité, and you know, that religion is kind of, it's like a personal thing. So there's a debate, of course, on the headscarf that's been going on since, you know, the late 80s, about what you, the public, I guess, side of religion versus private. And so there's, I think that is part of it as well, that there's a, you know, some people, you know, hold the belief that it's religion is private, should be within the home. And so I think that's also, you know, probably related as well.
Now, when you start the book, you get into documentary films first. What are some of the formal patterns that you find in these films? How does things like framing and the mediation of subjects affect how these films can be understood?
Well, when I was thinking about how to kind of structure the chapter, I was just noticing that in some of the films, there were kind of very heavy-handed techniques that were used. So, you know, to convey a message, and that the women's voices, I felt, in analyzing these, were being in some ways either changed or overlooked or used as kind of a link in the chain to make a certain argument. And so, you know, certain things taken, either very brief interviews included amongst many others on a certain topic, or, you know, as compared to other approaches, I guess. So looking at not only, you know, what kinds of questions are being asked, who's doing the interviewing, what could affect the way in which the women and how maybe comfortable they are speaking. So all of these, and how does that, you know, make an impact? So I divide the chapter in these three groups. The first kind of heavy-handed approach. The second is a much less heavy-handed approach. And then the third, it seems to be, so I talk about framing, like heavily framed in this first group, not so much in the second. And then in the third, it gives the impression that it's kind of this transparent process, that the women's voices are just being shared. But in fact, looking more closely, it's doctored isn't the right word, but it's being framed in a way that you wouldn't necessarily see or realize, you know, without looking more closely. So, and what was interesting to me is the more I looked at, so I divided these into these three groups, but then there are always, of course, going to be examples. So maybe the most interesting of the groups to look at was the second one. So, and oftentimes, you know, the directors are thinking, these are women who are not used to, you know, speaking in front of cameras, talking about themselves. Oftentimes, you know, what language are we going to interview the person in? And so they're trying to think about, you know, there's no way that the women's voices could come through without any sort of influence. Of course, you know, the questions will be asked. There's certain topics that that they will focus on. But, you know, how did they approach these interviews and these films with the women? And so I found some of really, really interesting ones, you know, kind of a minimalist approach. So oftentimes, for example, filming the women in their homes, in their own homes, oftentimes in the kitchen, because that was where the women spent a lot of their time. That's where the discussions in the families happened. It was more intimate space. Some of the one director, and actually she was some of these people, the directors are interviewing their parents or their moms. Some aren't, or maybe women that they knew growing up. But, you know, one woman and actually just to mention, I interviewed quite a few of the directors and the documentary filmmakers especially. So it was interesting for me to I could actually ask the questions like, how did you set this up? How when thinking about, you know, were the women's voices influenced? How did they represent themselves? How are their point of views coming across? And one of the directors I spoke to was interviewing her mom. And she talked about actually how she arrived with a film crew, and it wasn't that big. It was maybe three or four different people, which, you know, she was going to interview. So she had someone doing sound and different as someone, you know, working the camera. And she said she noticed that her mom wasn't speaking kind of normally, or in the way that she's expressing herself in the same ways that she would when it was just mother and daughter. And so she, the director, totally changed her approach and in the filmmaking process, and decided to speak to her. You know, her mom could speak, and she spoke Kabyle, so she would speak to her daughter the way she normally would, and she would then, the daughter would add subtitles, and she got rid of the crew basically, and then she felt that this was a more authentic rendering of her mom's experience. And then, so that's kind of one end of the spectrum. And then you have other films, like I talk about Yamina Benguigui's Mémoires d'Immigrés, and you know, how she uses, she's, you know, one of the cases is in the, is the third group that I mentioned, where it is fairly, it seems a kind of minimalist in terms of that there doesn't seem to be a lot of intervention from the filmmaker, from the editing, from others, but it's actually quite involved when you start thinking, breaking down, you know, well, for example, there are several different women in this film who are, this part of the film, who are interviewed, and you just hear that, you hear their voices, and the cameras quite close up, so you see their faces, and but then you notice that the director's, all the questions have been edited out, so you never actually hear the questions that were asked, and so you know that, you know, this conversation is being guided in a certain way, but you don't. But it gives the impression that that's not happening, or that it's it makes you forget anyway, that and you get the impression that you're hearing directly from the women, and so that those are kind of some that hopefully gives just kind of a little bit of an overview of some of the different, you know, techniques, different framing, whether this is in, you know, pre-production, during the filming itself, or in post-production. And speaking with the directors, I could kind of, some of them, I could get a feel for, did you ask specific questions? Did you ask certain, just about certain time periods? And also something else to mention was anyone else present? Sometimes the directors would ask, you know, if they were friends with the women's children, for example, to have the children present so that they could kind of talk to each other and the filmmaker could step back. And all of these different approaches had had an impact on what the women said. Mm-hmm.
Now, you also look at a set of short films, which is interesting in the sense that maybe not as many people get to view these films also. But I really like the way you kind of tackle these short films through the role of objects. So could you talk about what kind of objects do we find in these films, and how do they give expression to first-generation Maghrebi women?
Sure. Something I noticed when I was viewing the short films, and as you mentioned, some of these are, they're not readily available, unfortunately. Although with the time, as time goes on, I'm finding some are coming out on DVD, for example. Some of these I had to go to France to see them. Others I could find DVDs, or even now, you know, some of the films date back into the 90s. Early 90s, for example, and the filmmakers since then have gone on to make feature films. And when those films come out, sometimes the DVD contains a short film as part of a bonus. So I'm happy to see that a few of the films, even since this was published, have become available on DVD. So when I was looking at these films, I noticed, you know, this was the first time really I worked in depth on short films, and just noticed that there are certain objects, and not at all the same objects, that were coming, had a significant place in these films, and that they had a big impact on the narrative and on the way the women's experiences were being transmitted. And this was as diverse objects, from a play script, a ball of yarn, a letter, some of the I talk about some of the objects, you know, letters or written documents that in the film, in the films, you know, will bring people together for various reasons, but also can hinder expression or communication because, for example, the women don't read French, they need to ask someone for help. And so that can kind of bring people together. There's an example of a short film called Un Dimanche Matin à Marseille, Béranger. Sunday morning in Marseille, Béranger is the name of one of the characters. And in this, it's only 4-minute film by Mario Fanfani. The first generation woman receives a letter and she is illiterate. She can't, so she needs help. And she takes it to her neighbor. And usually it's the woman of the house who will help her read the letter and presumably write to respond to it. But it's the neighbor's husband who is there. And he's not very understanding. You can tell he's a little, he doesn't want to help her, doesn't think much of her. And the first generation woman, you know, says, "I won't bother you. I'll come back when your wife is here." She comes back later, comes for help, and is anxious, wants to know what's in the letter. And we learned through the eyes of this neighbor, who he sees a whole new side of this woman when he realizes the letter is from the woman's son who's in prison and he's not doing so well health-wise. And so the neighbor's whole perspective of this Maghrebi woman shifts and changes when he starts actually communicating with her. And it was this letter that brought them together. So that's one example. Another object, there is a really great filmmaker called Fejriye Deliba, and she's actually an actress as well. And she's on the cover of the book, Fejriye Deliba. So she plays, there's a feature film called Inch'Allah Dimanche, and she plays the lead role in that. But she made a short film called Le Petit Chaibo, The Little Cat is Dead. And within this film, it's a dialogue between the mother and the daughter. And they're reading, the daughter asks the mother for help practicing her role in a Molière play. And the mother can read French, and so there's kind of a repartee and some misunderstandings that arise in reading this text, where there's a young about relationships, and there's kind of the bigger message about the daughter and what she's doing outside of the home, and this communication comes about, and our understanding, better understanding of the two generations, their differences in this context in France, through reading a Molière play. And so this classic French literature also, 17th century brings up the question, about the French language and who's speaking the French language and how and what with, then certain accents and how, the language is such a central part of French identity. And, so using that in the film too, and also to transmit, I think one of the very unique things about this film also is there's some humor. Some of the misunderstandings lead to the mother laughing, and so it's a very joyous film actually as well. And it kind of counters sometimes there are other films that where either the women aren't kind of in this, center of the film, but they're also, portrayed as holding their daughters back or being stuck to tradition or, not necessarily the most positive view. So I think that, it's an interesting film for that reason. And the filmmaker actually just, so Fejriye Deliba had gone on really with her acting career after the film. Even the film itself received a lot of awards, but she didn't do any more filmmaking after that until just, it was last year, she made a feature film called D'une Pierre Deux Coups, which is about, it's kind of, the daughter, both the younger daughter, or the actress who plays the daughter, is in this film as well. And it's almost like Maghrebi family, 20 years later, the children are grown up and the mother, So the mother-daughter and mother-children relationship is still very present, but within the short films, to come back to the objects, it was a unique way in a lot of these films to look at communication, how the women get across borders, boundaries, limits in their lives. And that was a kind of a way of highlighting that. And maybe one final example is there's a film called Le Pelote de Laine, The Ball of Yarn. And in this film, there's a woman who's locked in her apartment with her child while her husband goes to work. And it's how she is able to communicate with a neighbor in the same apartment building using objects. And so they don't speak the language, but they exchange photos with a basket tied to a string. They exchange pastries and the ball of yarn comes into play with knitting children's clothes. But it's a very unique film that addresses some of the challenges. Obviously, that's a literal sense, being, you know, locked into an apartment, but in the broader sense of the challenges some, you know, women of this generation faced when they, you know, didn't speak French, needed to go out and, you know, do shopping or other things, and how they were able to negotiate that.
Yeah, it's a good chapter. I really like that approach too. The next chapter you look at telefilms, which are mm-hmm. interesting because this is almost kind of the opposite in terms of an audience to these short films, mm-hmm. In terms that they're very public. What would you say are some of the constraining characteristics and possible opportunities of telefilms, and what kinds of representations of Muslim women do we find in these types of mm-hmm. productions?
Sure. So some of the opportunities and constraints, the telefilm genre, I guess, is quite specific in that it's in terms of, so constraints, time for one thing, because it's telefilm in France. It's usually a Wednesday night, at least on the public networks. They're around maybe 8 o'clock at night, and they have to fit into the time slot. So they are 90 minutes. And so, you know, that's one thing. And thinking about also in terms of the audience, you have, you know, the short films, of course, filmmakers would love for their films to be seen by a lot of people, but they're not constrained by, you know, is someone going to turn the channel, or are we going to, you know, be able to keep the viewer's attention. And so that's another thing that's kind of, that is unique, I suppose, about when you're working with the telefilm. Making them is different. Also, the shooting time is much shorter. And often films will take some sort of inspiration, not always, but on current events and things like that. So there's an early telefilm from the early 90s that looks at the, you know, parents thinking about sending their daughter back to the home country, or, you know, there had been some in just very few, but of course getting, you know, press, you know, stories about a woman being kidnapped by her brother or father and taken to Algeria to be married off because she was, you know, interested in dating a Frenchman, something like that. So they can kind of, you know, be inspired by certain events, or at least that can be a reason, you know, that they're you know, taken on. In terms of, but of course, opportunities. So those, you know, are some constraints, but real opportunities in terms of reaching a public. You know, even the most successful films that I talk about in my study are nowhere, you know, in terms of viewership, are nowhere near what the telefilms are. You know, you can have millions of people see the film. And so their potential impact in shaping perceptions about you know, Muslim women, the Maghrebi population in this case, you know, there's a real, you know, potential there. And I think that I look at films from like 1993 to the most recent, just a few years ago. And there's a real change, I would say. There's a real shift. The early ones kind of followed, you know, they tend to portray women, Muslim, the mothers, as holding their children back, or as, you know, when the women speak out, it's in a way, you know, either to, if they're not silent, to, you know, condemn the daughter's behavior, something like that. Whereas the more recent ones, notably, for example, there's a series called Aisha by Yamida Bengigi and others, but that look at, they give a very different portrayal of the Maghrebi mothers as, you know, seeking to do things for themselves and their own lives. There's a great, the mother in that series is a really interesting, interesting character. She, thinking about, I talk a lot about agency in this particular chapter, how women are overcoming barriers or not, and in how their experiences are communicated. And the mother character is really, in Aisha, is interesting for a number of reasons. One, I think because it's unique in that there's humor, and something that struck me in looking at, you know, these different kinds of films is that, especially like in the documentaries, and in speaking with filmmakers who were filming their mothers, they talked about, and I saw in some documentaries, the sense of humor of these women, of some of, you know, of course, without painting with a broad brush, but and that's the side of the women that a lot of people didn't see, because oftentimes maybe they're speaking, you know, for example, Arabic together. And so if you didn't speak Arabic and you saw people on the street, you wouldn't understand the humor. You wouldn't know what they're saying. And that the women oftentimes also would, you know, have humor, make jokes, do things when they were among women that they wouldn't necessarily do when men were present. So that was kind of something that I thought was really interesting, but that hadn't really been explored in feature films or in the telefilm until, you know, Aisha is a good example. So that stood out for that reason, that it kind of brought to light this aspect, and I saw a connection that wasn't evident from, that's of course not all of the films, but for the telefilm. Another film that's worth mentioning is Le Choix de Mariam, which is by Malik Chiban. And this was a film, so Aisha focused on contemporary France, notably through the eyes of the daughter, the daughter of immigrants, Aisha. Le Choix de Mariam, produced around the same time period, is a two-part telefilm, and that looks at which is also unique, looking at the moment of arrival of this first-generation woman, Miriam, and her family in the 60s, and so taking that perspective and highlighting that. So I think within the telefilm, there maybe is some there's a broad range, and I think it has that it's constantly evolving as well, and how it, you know, shaping our understandings. But that is something I found really interesting, and also that there are just more of them recently. So there was in this whole, you know, over 20 year period I looked at, there were just a couple in the 90s, and then it's becoming more and more of interest, I think, to audiences, and so we're seeing more on television that way.
Now, the last chapter that you look at, you examine feature films, and there are a few where Maghrebi women are playing leading roles. So, what kind of themes or patterns do you see in kind of the representation of their subjective experiences? How do these fit with kind of the broader narratives about Maghrebi women in French society? Are they challenging dominant stereotypes in France, or how do you feel like these are viewed?
Sure. So yes, in this this chapter, I looked at my kind of key question was, to what extent do these films invite viewers to come to a better understanding of the women portrayed in the films? And as you mentioned, the really exciting things is that there are women in the lead roles in some of these films and or in key roles. And I looked at, I noticed in looking at these together, and I think that's one of the things with the approach that I took with the book is that I wanted to include, I couldn't of course talk about everything, but I watched at least, there are probably 70 films, if not more, but at least 70 that are mentioned in the book, and that I knew I couldn't go into depth about all of the films. And so, of course, within the project, I make some selections. But one of the things I wanted to do is to look at this broadly, to look at some trends, and just to kind of see, how are different people approaching this. And something I noticed in the feature films is that, and looking at women's voices, their experiences and subjectivity, and how their voices are being communicated, some of these are done through speech verbally, and in different ways. So not just, for example, the film Récit de crime sous les pieds des femmes, Where Women Tread. This uses, which is quite a unique technique, a lot of voiceover. So we really get into the head of into the mind of the protagonist, who this is someone who she and her husband were involved in the Algerian struggle for independence, and they live in France, and someone with whom that they haven't seen for years, who was active in the movement with them, comes to their apartment and brings back a lot of memories, good and bad, mostly bad or difficult anyway. But in this approach, the director decided to have a voiceover commentary so that we'd hear the perspective of the first generation woman, which is something that's quite interesting, is that the audience is the audience hears her perspective because it's the voiceover. But this is the thoughts, and what is communicated is not necessarily transmitted to her family. So we have access as as viewers to her memories, the way she remembers things, to her voice, to her perspective, to how she responds and what she thinks about this person who suddenly is back in their lives. But it also addresses the fact that within the specific context that there, memories are not always transmitted to the children. And so the daughter in the film has a certain interpretation of events, and we see there's a real miscommunication. And so that's something particular to but not limited to the Algerian struggle for independence, and something that the director Rachid Krim wanted to tackle. She is the daughter of Algerian immigrants and who had been involved in the independence struggle, and so that was one way into talk about the verbal communication that technically that was done, and then there's also on the other spectrum nonverbal communication, looking at body language. I mentioned earlier the film Inch'Allah Dimanche that Fejri Deliba is the lead actress in, and some of the techniques that she doesn't say much in in the film, but we are we share her emotions, or we're invited to share her emotions and her perspective through, for example, music that is part of the soundtrack, through particular camera shots, point of view shots. We see, for example, when she arrives into her apartment, looking around the apartment, what is she seeing, where her husband had been living for several years until they were reunited. So that there's a real range of techniques in these different films, and then some of the films draw on both, of course, verbal and both verbal and nonverbal. And so I guess within considering within the project itself, I think another important thing to consider, and that I would try to bring across in the feature film chapter, is that there's a wide range of experiences, and and these films challenge the perceptions I kind of talked about at the beginning about this a silent generation, disempowered generation, how the women's voices are communicated, and that there's a real diversity in terms of the perspectives that are communicated, also how this is done, and even one of the the feature films is called 17 Rue Bleue, 17 Blue Avenue, so the address. And something that was, you know, quite unique in this particular film is that the film actually calls into question, but the protagonist in this film, you don't always know when she's telling the truth or what she's holding back. There's so to think about that as well and how that's communicated.
Well, overall, this is a really wonderful study. It's an enjoyable read, and it makes my film viewing list very, very long, which anyway, I'm not as excited about. But yeah, lots of wonderful stuff here. Before I let you go, could you tell us a little bit about some of the things you have lined up in terms of things you're working on?
Sure. So one avenue I'm excited that there are, so since the book has been published, there have been two feature films that have first generation women as the protagonist. Two feature films that came out. One, as I mentioned, is D'une pierre deux coups de Fejria Deliba, really interesting film. Another is Fatima, which won a lot of awards in France. That's by Philippe Faucon, who's a couple of other films I talk about in the book. And so looking at, I'm next going to focus on those films and, you know, are they, what do they have to add? You know, and how can I compare, how do they compare to the films? Does it fit, you know, well into kind of the framework that I establish, or are they doing some new things? So that's one. And just because it's quite astonishing to see actually, you know, two films and to see the publicity as well. And the, to have films recognized, because there's some really great films. And so that's one kind of avenue. The other I've been working on, really interested in the careers and films of actors and actresses of North African and West African descent in France. And so I've worked a little bit on Leila Bekhti, Rachida Brakni, and also, you know, an actor like Omar Sy, and Hafsir Hossi is another one, looking at these within the French film industry. What is the place made or being made for actors and actresses of minority ethnic background? And, you know, and also, what kinds of films are being made? What kind of choices are they getting? Are the fact that there are more and more actors and actresses of, or ethnic minority actors and actresses getting recognition in the film industry, mainstream through, you know, the equivalent of the Oscars, the César Awards, and others, is that having an impact, and to what extent on the French film industry? So I'm looking to kind of go down those two avenues. So a lot of, and there are more and more films coming out all the time. So it's really exciting for me to
never run out of stuff to work on.
Exactly, just trying to keep up.
Great. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for writing this wonderful book, and thanks for making the time to talk about it.
Thanks. My pleasure. Thanks for the excellent questions.
That was my conversation with Leslie Kellifer-Kemp about Muslim women in French cinema, Voices of Maghrebi Migrants in France, published with Liverpool University Press in 2016. Thanks for listening to New Books in Islamic Studies. We'll catch you next time.